Chumba.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
D-Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. We will get to the NFL draft in just a moment because during my weekend,
riled up,
during my weekend home alone, I had a lot of time to listen to things. As a Jew on Easter, there really isn't much for you to do. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of time to listen to stuff. And I found a really interesting conversation about the Titans and the NFL draft that we will get to in just a few moments. But I do want to go back to what we talked about before Teron Davenport joined the program. As I was watching the Predators game on Saturday, and you had Yaroslav Askarov.
Get it right.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't pay attention to what he calls himself.
It's messed up. It's messed up. It's not your fault. It's not your fault, Adam.
I remember.
We had to adjust all of us.
On the broadcast, of course. Yes.
Yeah, we said it right, which is wrong, a couple of times. And we had to say, we just have to keep saying it wrong.
Okay. Well, Yaroslav Askarov, as I was watching the game between him and the Sharks and UC Soros and the Predators, which the Predators won 6-3 on Saturday night at the Shark Tank. As I was watching that game, I started thinking about Soros specifically. And what I presented earlier in the show is I believe that UC Soros has a perception problem. This was my theory that there are a lot of fans in this city who love the Predators who are lukewarm on UC Soros. I remember our friend Adam from Portland called in a couple of weeks ago. And Adam, if you're listening and I misinterpret what you said, you can call and fix it for me. Adam said, I'm pulling for the Preds. I still don't like Soros. And I do think there are fans out there who feel the way that Adam does. This was my overall point. I think it would be incredibly beneficial for UC Soros to level up and play outstanding down the stretch over the next 2 weeks and get the Predators into the playoffs, because I think that may help with this perception problem. I don't think, as Willie said, and this is what sort of caught me off guard, but then we received a text to the similar effect. By bringing up the perception problem I think he has, is not me endorsing that perception. I'm in tune with this fan base. I know how y'all think. And I know there are plenty of you who don't think UC Soros can win big games. That's why I brought up the Olympics, for example. UC Soros was outstanding in the game for Finland against Canada. Outstanding. He gave them every chance to win. But he didn't win. And people aren't going to remember that he played spectacularly and lost. People are going to remember that he lost. That's my point. I think that he can really help himself by looking like the UC Soros in the back half of the 56-game season, where he dragged the Predators into the playoffs single-handedly and I believe received MVP votes for it. That's my point. Maybe I missed something. I don't think I endorsed the perception by bringing up the perception problem. But maybe I'm wrong. You tell me, Willie.
Okay, well, I got two things. Number one, now we're moving the goalposts on what's a big game. You've already established that there have been two or three seasons, definitely two, I would argue the third, which was the season that got paused at the bubble, where he was starting to be the main starter, and he was elevating them towards the playoffs. And the season stopped, they would have been in the playoffs. And then they changed the rules and put more teams in that postseason. We know what happened there. Then 2021, and then the following season, 21-22, he was the only reason they made the playoffs. So when you say he can't win the big game, He won a lot of big games.
I am not – I, Adam Scott Vigan, I'm not saying that.
He can't win the big game, right? isn't that what people are saying? He can't win the big game.
Correct. That's not me saying it.
But now we're talking about regular season games. He's got to win the big games here. He's already done that. He's already elevated. Would you agree that he has elevated them into the playoffs almost single-handedly more than once? True?
Let's see. In 2021, for sure. He has certainly
in
helped this season.
2022, for sure.
Yes, 2022, for sure. That or 2021, whatever the year they played the Hurricanes in the playoffs. I can't remember.
Right, and then the following year when he was injured right before, and they had he not gotten injured, by the way, they would have played the Flames in the first round and not the Avalanche.
Understood.
But they had to play the Avalanche without him. But he won tons of big games to get them to that point. True?
Yes.
Okay. So he's already won big games. But now we're saying he's got to get them into the playoffs by winning big games. He's already done that. But there's a whole other group of people that say until he wins in the playoffs, he hasn't won any big games. So which is it?
I think it started with the playoffs. Him not winning the games in the playoffs. That's where it originally started because before then, during the regular season, I mean, he was able to carry the team at certain points. So then it became, and this was not as, it was as frequent as last year. Well, he hasn't won in the playoffs. He hasn't won games in the playoffs. So they keep on moving the goalposts. The goalpost is going to be forever moved. Once it's the playoffs, and now it's he can't win big games during the regular season, even though he has shown that he can win games. He should stick with until he proves, which would be fair, until you prove that you can win a series, that they can win a series with you, then that's when a narrative change. And that's across sports, period.
Yes,
but now people are trying to take it into the regular season where, no, he's proven in the regular season he can do that.
I think that is fair, that until you win in the playoffs, you're going to have that label whether you like it or not, whether it's fair or not.
Mm-hmm.
But this brings me to the second part. Mm-hmm. For all the fans that still have this thorn in their side on him and are nitpicking at everything, and I would grant you, this season, for the most part, for the season as a whole, he has not carried them on his back like he has in the past. And I would argue that it's harder to do that for a goalie now than it ever has. Just the way the sport is going, the way the save percentages are calculated, the offenses, it's hard to dominate just with your goalie. It's more difficult now than it was even 5 years ago. But set that aside. Who would you rather them have? You want Askarov to be your goalie now?
Are you asking me specifically or generally?
Well, okay, you can answer for yourself, but also what do the people that aren't satisfied with Soros, what would you have had them do? You still want to go back and have Askarov as your guy? I was saying for years leading up to it, he's not ready. He's not ready. Here we are 2 years later. He's not ready. If you watch the game Saturday, you would agree, right? Those were not good goals.
No, he did not look good on Saturday.
He wasn't good, and he hasn't been good in a while. He had a really hot stretch for about 15 games early in the year. He has really dropped off since then, which is normal for a guy at 24. When UC Soros was 24, he was, for a second straight year, an outstanding backup for Pecorine, doing tremendously well in the role that he should have been in. I would argue that Askarov could have been that guy for Soros had he not gotten impatient, pushed the envelope, and asked to be traded. But we know what happened, right? But for all of you that want to dump on UC Soros, he's not worth the contract, which he gave them a sweetheart deal. He makes $7.7 million. He's, what, ninth or tenth highest-paid goalie? So I don't know what the beef is, really. What would you rather have them do? Let Soros walk? Have Askarov be the goalie? Who do you want to be the goalie?
Here are two differing opinions on this topic. Caleb says, the only question you use when people say Soros sucks and can't win in the playoffs is which playoff series where Soros was the starter did the Predators have the better roster? Then we've got another texter, John, who says he hasn't won a playoff series. That's the end of the discussion for a non-elite trustworthy goaltender. But this is what
So then my follow-up question to people who subscribe to that second opinion is who should they have being the goalie right now?
Okay, well,
Askarov?
The texter can reply if he wants. 615-737-1025. Let's go to Mark.
I'm asking, do you want Askarov? that's a bad joke.
Well, it's okay. That's all right. Let's go to Mark in Ashland City on our phone line. Mark, thank you for calling. Go to bed. Oh, go ahead, not go to bed. You could. Now that's
go to bed.
That's
a
dad joke. That's a dad joke. You can go to bed if you want, Mark, but go ahead, please.
So I was calling in just because I think it's not a UC Saros problem. I think it's a Pecorine problem. UC Saros is the guy that followed Pecorine, and he was known for winning those playoff series where the Predators didn't necessarily have the better roster. And that's not UC Saros' fault at all. I think he's great. I love him. I hope he's here for the rest of his contract. But unfortunately, he's the guy that followed the guy. And that's, you know, this standard in the fan base is what comes with that. That's all I got.
Thank you, Mark. That is a very good point. Pecorine, I mean, the guy has a statue outside the arena mm-hmm. for what he did for this organization. I completely understand that. Pecorine made a name for himself in this league by playing outstanding hockey in the playoffs and making the Predators more competitive than they probably should have been. So that I am not being accused of leaving out the facts, here is how UC Saros has played since the Olympic break. 7-3-2 with a .295 goals against average, a .901 save percentage. He has saved nearly 11 goals above expected, and he has made 9 quality starts and 12 tries. So that's 75%. But there are still people out there who do not see that as good enough. And here's part of it too, Willie. One of the stats we like to bring up, I know you bring it up on the broadcast, we talk about it all the time, goaltending steals, right? UC Saros, I believe, is second in the NHL in goaltending steals. The easy way to define that, UC Saros, I believe the number is 12 or 13. He has had a direct hand in 12 or 13 of the Predators' wins this season. He has saved more goals than expected that in those 12 or 13 games that made the difference in the game. So by that definition, UC Saros has really carried the load for the Predators. But here's the thing, Willie.
Recently he has, for sure. But his season as a whole,
yes.
I still would not rank it among his best seasons as a Predator. I'll grant you that. But I still would ask the fans who are being critical, look at it relative to the league. Look at all the other teams that are having goalie problems. And then ask. Then I continue to ask, what are you wanting them? Do you think what do we think would have happened if they had said, "Yep, let's trade UC Saros and have Askarov be the goalie"? What do you think would have been different? I just don't think that the results would be as good.
Here is where I was going with that. When people think of a goaltending steal, a goaltender standing on his head and winning a game for a team, a lot of people's minds go to what you saw Connor Hellebuck do in the gold medal game for Team USA versus Canada. Team USA would not have won gold if not for Connor Hellebuck. UC Saros has had a solid season overall, I would say. I would agree with you, Willie. It's been up and down, but overall I would say it's solid. I think he's played his best hockey down the stretch. But people, when they think about the value of a goaltender and a goaltender leveling up, they think of what Hellebuck did in the Olympics. And I think, again, that plays into the perception problem. So my whole point was this. I think it would help that perception problem, help it go away a little bit, if UC Saros continues to play the way he's been playing, maybe even a little bit better, and wills the Predators into the playoffs. I mean, I saw a stat today that the Predators could become, I believe, the third team in the wild card era to make the playoffs after trailing the final spot by at least 11 points. It's a great story, objectively. And if UC Saros can help the Predators cross the finish line, I think that would help. But this is what I'm saying, Willie. If the Predators miss the playoffs, if the Predators struggle down the stretch, The day that we come in the studio, the following day at 3 o'clock, and we're talking about the Predators missing the playoffs, who's going to get a lot of the blame?
Well, that's just part of playing goalie.
Understood, but that's my point. That's part of my point. Even if it's not his fault that they missed the playoffs, people are going to blame him for them missing the playoffs.
Right, yeah. And we will hash that out, I'm sure, accordingly. He can't win the big game bothers me, because what is a big game? These last two games have been big games. Those are big, and they only get bigger from here.
Right, but within
big as well.
My point earlier was within that game. Let's go back to the Kings game on Thursday. Within that game, the Predators blew leads of 3-0 and 4-1, and Saros gave up two bad rebounds that led to goals against for the Kings. The Lawton goal and the Armia goal were because of bad rebounds by UC Saros. He recovered. The game went to overtime. He stopped 8 skaters in the shootout. The Predators win. But there are some fans who will probably say it should have never been in that spot. They were up 3-0 and 4-1. And the blame goes on the goalie.
They were down 2-0 in how many games? They weren't supposed to win those games, but they came back and won. This is how hockey happens sometimes. And I grant you, that was not a great game by Saros against the Kings. And I would say that, you know, if you're really grading him, he would be graded down on those two goals. He also made a lot of really good saves in that game as well. But by and large, I mean, this is going to happen in some games. You're not going to be lights out every night. Like, if we're comparing him to Hellebuck in the Olympics, like, that's one of the greatest performances in hockey history in any level.
Definitely.
And Saros, I think, he's capable of that, and I'm hoping that he is able to do that in these last handful of starts that he gets. But he got it done. You know, they won the game.
615-737-1025. The Predators and UC Saros are back in action tonight in a big game against the LA Kings. Puck drop at 9:30, pregame at 8:30, right here on 102.5 The Game. Coming up next, we have been talking about one NFL draft prospect in particular more than any other in the lead up to the NFL draft. And I am wondering, after listening to something over the weekend, if we are exaggerating this prospect's potential impact on the Tennessee Titans. We will discuss that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game.
The Cowboys point brings me to the other thing that gets mentioned a lot, which is like, well, you got to help your young quarterback. We are all on this pod Cam Ward fans, Titans fans.
Yes.
They all really want Jeremiah.
Way high.
I've discovered. When you look back at the young quarterbacks, year one or two, who broke out, and you look at the conditions, every single one of them, I made a list right now, had either a wide receiver one, like a legit dude, or, and this is what you would say with the 2016 Cowboys, Dak Prescott, an elite offensive line. And very few of them had elite running backs, to be honest. It's wide receiver, offensive line.
That was Mina Kimes on her podcast talking about Jeremiah Love. And as I said, as a Jew on Easter, I didn't really have much to do this weekend. My kids and my wife are out of town. Everything was closed. It was a beautiful day yesterday. Took my dog Pretzel to the dog park, popped in some AirPods, listened to some podcasts. And I came across that podcast, Mina Kimes' podcast, talking about the Titans and Jeremiah Love. And we on this show have wholeheartedly endorsed Jeremiah Love. Well, at least Derek and I have. Willie, he hasn't given Jeremiah Love his full stamp of approval yet. But he's considering it, right, Willie?
I've been measured. Yeah, I'm measured about it. I think if you've got him clearly as the most talented player when you pick, and you're picking at 4, then I'm fine with that.
Derek is smitten.
But only that way. Only if it's that.
Derek,
like if Sonny Styles has, that's why I asked Teron the question about Sonny Styles.
And that
if
that
Styles
was an interesting
is
point.
More, yeah, if you have him rated higher as an overall prospect, then I think you take him.
So Derek is smitten. He loves himself some love. It's going to take a lot to convince Derek Mason not to love Jeremiah Love. But I hear that from Kimes, and we'll play more from that podcast in just a moment. And I'm wondering, have we been exaggerating Jeremiah Love's potential impact on the Titans? You'll hear it in the clip we play in a little bit. There have been high-end running backs out there drafted high, such as Christian McCaffrey and Bijan Robinson, so on and so forth, who in their first couple of years didn't completely change the fortunes of their respective franchises. Jeremiah Love is an outstanding prospect. He may be the number one overall prospect regardless of position in this draft. We have told you how explosive he is, how versatile he is. I know a lot of you are also smitten with the idea of Jeremiah Love. But after hearing that from Mina Kimes and more of that conversation, which again, we'll play more in just a bit, I'm beginning to wonder, Derek, if we are so starved for an offensive superstar in Tennessee that we are trying to convince ourselves that Jeremiah Love can have an impact on this team that historically running backs around the NFL may not have immediately. So let me ask you that question. Do you think at all that we've been exaggerating Love's potential impact on this team?
I don't think we have. I think the Titans are just in need of a superstar, period. Because, listen, I think Jeff is a superstar, but he's on an older end. He will be segueing out pretty soon. You have Cam Ward, who they hope becomes a superstar. But outside of Jeffrey Simmons, put him in his own category because eventually he will age out. He's not someone that is going to be in that new stadium for 3, 4, 5 years. So what they're starved of is a true playmaker. They are starving for one. They haven't had one since A.J. Brown. And before that, Derrick Henry. It was Derrick Henry, and then before that, A.J. Brown. So it's not that they're starving for this offensive guy. They're starving for a playmaker, period. That's why when the season ended, what was it? Bane. Everybody wanted Bane or the kid out of Texas A&M. Because they seem to be superstars. Now it's Sonny Styles. Why? Because they seem to be guys, superstars in the making. Guys that can come in and immediately help the Tennessee Titans. So we're starved for a guy like that, period. But when it comes to the running back, people don't want to be wrong. And I understand that. And history is telling them, at least the last 10, 12 years, probably a little bit longer than that, that you can't win with just one dominant running back. You got to have this two running back sort of system. And that is the only way you win in the NFL. You can't win with a superstar back. But if you have a back that can affect the game in several different ways, yeah, you can win with that back, and we've already seen it. Philadelphia was a lock to win the Super Bowl. When? They got Saquon Barkley. They had already had A.J. Brown, and they couldn't win it. They had Jalen Hurts. They had Devontae Smith.
But
and
the
they
Eagles,
couldn't. They had the defense.
The Eagles had a more complete team at time.
I understand that.
Saquon Barkley was the final piece of the puzzle.
Absolutely, I understand that. But even with the Giants started winning when? When Saquon Barkley. When they got a healthy Saquon Barkley with a competent quarterback, obviously, he made the quarterback look better, much better. But the Giants chose to keep the quarterback rather than the running back, and we see what happened. So I think the closer and closer we get, people are afraid to say Love can be this guy. Instead of saying they just need an impact player, whether it's Love, whether it's Bane, whether it's Sonny Styles, they need an impact player. So if they just need an impact player, why are people so quickly to kind of skirt away from Jeremiah Love? He is an impact player. Anybody you draft that high, you want to be an impact player. And if they're not that impact player, what happens? People say, oh, he was a bust. Y'all should have picked somebody else. We saw it with Corey Davis. He wasn't an impact player. We thought he was going to be. People said, well, you don't advance unless you have a A1 wide receiver. Well, they drafted one that high. And what happened? It ended up not working out the way they thought it was.
So here's a stat, Willie, from The Athletic. Since 2010, 9 running backs have been drafted in the top 10. 7 of those 9 teams had losing records in the ensuing 4 years. We'll exclude Ashton Jeanty because he's played one season, and the Raiders went 3-14. Bijan Robinson, since joining the Falcons, they are 23-28. In Saquon Barkley's first 4 years with the New York Giants, they were 19-46. Leonard Fournette with the Jaguars, 22-42. Christian McCaffrey with the Panthers, 28-36. You have to go all the way to Ezekiel Elliott in 2016. The Cowboys went 38-24 over Elliott's first 4 seasons with the team.
But context is very important.
All right, so add the context. Add the context.
What was the first running back? I'm going to give you the context. What was the first running back?
Excluding Jeanty.
Yeah, it's excluding Jeanty. Well, even Jeanty.
Okay, you want to mention?
Yeah,
the Raiders went 3-14 last season.
Did they have a quarterback?
Go
to the next one.
Bijan Robinson.
Did he have a quarterback? No, let's go to the next one.
Saquon Barkley.
He didn't have a quarterback.
I mean, Daniel Jones had, one good year?
With Saquon Barkley, absolutely okay. Right. So go to the next one.
Leonard Fournette.
Who was his quarterback?
I believe it was Bortles, right?
Yeah, they went to the playoffs.
It would have been Bortles,
They went
right?
to the AFC Championship game. It may have been Bortles. Yeah.
That was pre-Lawrence,
but it was Bortles. Bortles really wasn't that good.
No.
Yeah, but they did go to AFC Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
So there's context to this, McCaffrey was a already injured.
Yeah. Well,
older Cam Ward. I mean, Cam. Not Cam Ward.
You're thinking of Cam Newton.
Cam Newton.
Yes. McCaffrey came in, I believe,
at the end of his run.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
By the time McCaffrey came in.
When people mention these things, they don't mention that other component, the quarterback. They never mention that. They just say, you can't take – no. Give me the whole story. Don't just give me half of the story. Did they have a quarterback? No. Okay, then. That's where we need to stop. Saquon showed you that if he had a quarterback, somebody that was competent to control things, he can win a Super Bowl for you. And he did it. So it can be done. Atlanta's still looking for their quarterback, aren't they? Absolutely.
Yep. Penix. We'll see.
49ers just run into this injury thing all the time.
It's the substation.
Yeah, it's the substation. So when you talk about these running backs, it's not fair to not mention, who was underneath center for those running backs. You go back to Ezekiel Elliott. Ezekiel had Tony Romo, I believe.
Or was that Dak?
Dak coming in, too.
Yeah,
Dak,
it was Dak. He played with Tony, but I think he played with Dak, too.
Prescott's first season was 2016. Ezekiel Elliott was drafted in 2016.
So they both came in at the same
time.
But he didn't start. Dak didn't start off the starter, did he?
In 2016, he started 16 games.
Oh, he started all. Oh, yeah, he started
all
16.
Remember, he was unexpectedly good because he wasn't a first-round pick. So they was Elliott their first-round pick, and then they got Prescott in the fourth round or third round, whenever they got him?
Yes, they were drafted in the same year.
Which means they had to lean. They leaned heavy on who? The running back.
Yeah.
The Titans are in the same situation.
Exactly. To build a winner.
Exactly. The Titans are in the same situation. They got a young quarterback who they believe is promising, but they need to be able to lean on something as he develops. I understand leaning on the defense, but again, because I've been a part of it. Defenses, after a while, it's a war of attrition. And if they get hurt, and if you don't have somebody on the offensive side of the ball that can carry the weight too, you're going to end up losing. Especially as your young quarterback is developing, as Cam Ward is. So that's what I lean back on. Listen, drafting Jeremiah Love doesn't hurt your team at all. It makes you better. That's what I land on. He makes you a better ball club, just like Sonny Styles would, just like Bane would, just like the kid out of Texas A&M would.
But Willie,
Let me play the other side just a little bit. I'm not disagreeing with you. If and this comes back to the same thing every time, is Love exceptional and way better than what you would have otherwise at that position, where the perception, right or wrong, around the league is that you can go cheap on running backs and get a decent amount of production. Teams have done it that way. You look at the Super Bowl winners, they've done it that way very often. And it's not a name that's going to make the Hall of Fame or anything to it. Isaiah Pacheco and guys like that. So if Love is exceptional, then I buy into your theory 100%. But if they feel like, let's just take Sonny Styles, because we've been talking about him today. If he's exceptional, then he is changing the defense. You get him and you get Pollard and whatever formula you have. And what's the net result of that? Or a dynamic edge rusher and whatever you can come up with running back. So I think that's part of the reason why what I read into some of those numbers, Adam, is you a lot of times those teams aren't very good. They draft the running back, and he's good, but he's not enough to carry the rest of a bad roster, especially, as Derek points out, if you don't have the quarterback.
615-737-1025. Have we been exaggerating Jeremiah Love's potential impact on the Titans? 615-737-1025. We'll continue the conversation. We'll play more from Mina Kimes' podcast, which led to me having this question in my mind. We'll do that coming up next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.
And then people say, well, he's a weapon. So I sent you guys this, but like, okay, it's not entirely fair to limit this to EPA when you're talking about receiving. But last year, total receiving EPA, Christian McCaffrey ranked 34th, expected points added, which is basically looking at every single play and asking how much does this get used closer to scoring a touchdown. It's your most totalistic way to look at value. Christian McCaffrey was 34th behind Parker Washington, whom I love. Bijan Robinson was 55th behind Elik Ayomanor. EPA per play, the highest rank was Bijan Robinson, who was 85th behind Juwan Johnson. So, yes, a pass-catching running back is absolutely useful. And if you tell me Kyle Shanahan's coming with him, maybe we'll have a different conversation.
Right.
But by and large, this is not the best way to add value, not just to a team and salary and all that, but to help your young quarterback. You need receivers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So yes. Tennessee, you know, my dream outcome for them is trade down and get Carnell Tate somehow. Or you take one of the edge rushers because they desperately need that.
That was Mina Kimes, by the way. I did love the way she pronounced Elik Ayomanor. It was spicy. A little spice to Elik Ayomanor. But, Derek, you're shaking your head. Based on what you heard, I guess?
Yeah, based on what I heard.
What didn't you like, Derek Mason?
Understands and knows from a national standpoint. But this is not just because it's Mina Kimes. I think if the name was Jody Kimes or Bob Kimes, it doesn't matter to me. If the words were the same, I still would be shaking my head. One, this is someone that really hasn't looked at the Titans in that manner because of sort of, oh, they need to move, get Carnell Tate. They need a receiver. The receiver to me is not necessarily their problem right now. They went out and addressed portions of it. Wan'Dale Robinson should upgrade. A healthy Calvin Ridley, that upgrades, but he has to stay healthy. I get that. That upgrades the receiving room. They had two rookies that show promise, so that upgrades the room. Do they have the best receiving core? No, they don't. But it's, to me, again, unless they get a sweetheart deal, you stay at four, and you're not drafting a receiver at four. And I don't think they're trading now just to draft a receiver then at four, I mean, at whatever pick, unless they're moving further down, which puts them out of the range of a impact player. But other than that, no. Listen, I understand the analytics. I do. I understand numbers. And she can use the numbers to justify that. And that's okay. But when I'm watching a game, or when Denard Wilson was on the sideline, he don't want to hear what you're talking about, because what he's game planning for that guy to be an impact catching a football as well as running a football? Do you think that people just said, you know what, we just going to scout Christian McCaffrey for running a football? We're just going to base it on him running the football. No. You know what they did? They said, we gotta make sure we know where he's at when he's outside of the backfield, when he motions out, when he runs an angle, and when he runs between the tackles. We got to make sure this kid, we know where this kid is at all times. And if you don't think that affects a game, an offense, or then a defense, you're blind. You can throw the stats at me. I understand. I get it. You know, these numbers that she threw out and they were low. I get that part. But when you are game planning on that day for that day, when you watch those teams like Atlanta, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Detroit Lions, they are talking about those backs being three-dimensional. We got to cover the whole field from the backfield to the sidelines. That means them running the football as well as passing the football.
Here would be my
or catching it.
Here would be my counter argument, mm-hmm. and Willie can chime in as well. During that conversation, we did not play that part of the conversation, but during that conversation, she mentioned all of the wide receivers who played a part in a young quarterback breaking out. She mentioned Keenan Allen with Justin Herbert. She mentioned...
Did Justin Herbert win the Super Bowl? He barely got to the damn playoffs.
Hold on, let me get through it. She mentioned Herbert, mm-hmm. and Keenan Allen. She mentioned C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins. She mentioned Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, among others. I believe she mentioned that Kyler Murray didn't begin to break out until he had DeAndre Hopkins. I mm-hmm. forget that DeAndre Hopkins played for the Arizona Cardinals because I forget that the Arizona Cardinals exist most of the time. But that was her point, that those teams had those number one caliber wide receivers. And you're right. Jim Dike, Alec Ayomanor, or however Mina Kimes pronounces
it. How does she pronounce it?
Alec Ayomanor.
That means she doesn't watch the team much. And I'm not blaming her for that. I probably would have said it wrong, too, if I didn't cover the Titans
I think he should go with that pronunciation next season. It sounds exotic, like Antonio Banderas, Alec Ayomanor. Like, that's what I think he should do. But Dike and Ayomanor had solid rookie seasons. Mm-hmm. We talked all season long about how rare it was for a quarterback to have his top three receiving targets be fourth-round rookies, mm-hmm. because it was Ayomanor and DK and Gunnar Helm. But the Titans don't have that guy. Calvin Ridley's back.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this many, many times. Calvin Ridley is a number one receiver on this team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's considered a number one receiver in the NFL. Wandale Robinson, he knows Brian Daboll. He can be effective. But he's also not a number one wide receiver. Easy for me to say. So that would be my counter argument. Like, look, Derek, you played the game. You know that I imagine that if the Titans were to draft Jeremiah Love, a lot of opposing defensive coordinators are going to spend all week long game planning for Jeremiah Love because you don't know what he's going to do out there. But I hear, and I would love Willie's thoughts on this, I hear Mina Kimes' argument that it's more about having a number one caliber receiver or an offensive line. The running back can help, but recently it appears that the running back doesn't move the needle as much as other positions when it comes to developing a young quarterback.
That's why the individual evaluation of this running back is everything, because to pick him fourth, you have to believe that he is going to be the guy and going to be the guy pretty early, because I completely agree with D-Mace that the impact of a player like that does help the whole team, not just the quarterback, but the game planning, all of that. He's just got to be that guy. There's plenty of teams that do go about it without that guy in the backfield that still find a way to make it work and win games, especially if you've got a quarterback that can compensate for it. All the running back has to do sometimes is keep you honest, but a special running back makes a special impact. I think Christian McCaffrey is a great example. So is he in that caliber? That's my only question.
Mm-hmm.
Is he that type of guy? If he is, and he's the best on the board there, then I'm all in.
When basically the whole NFL, those who do scouting, coaching, the consensus is he is that type of guy. If he wasn't, they wouldn't be. It wouldn't be this conversation of drafting him at a high. See, that's the problem that I have. People are saying, "Well, you can't draft him high because he's not." But everybody's telling y'all, if we were just ranking these guys based upon just your talent and what you, he is higher than a lot of these other guys that they're talking about: Carnell Tate, Sonny Styles, all these guys. Some even think that he's that best player in the draft. Period. So obviously, the whole football world thinks he's that guy. So that's why I can't wrap my mind when I hear things like this. It's not like there's people saying that, oh, he's just the best running back. Like, he's the best running back. That's what he is. But people are saying he's the best talent in the NFL. That means quarterback people, running back, wide receivers, tackles, defensive ends, punters, kickers, whoever, coaches. Whoever, he's a top four guy. And in some people's mind, he's number one or number two. So when the consensus across the board is that, you can't tell me that he's not an impact player. The only thing you can come to me with is say, well, what if he gets hurt? Well, I can say that about Sonny Styles. I can say that about Carnell Tate. Okay, if the Titans move down in the draft, I'm not moving down unless you give me two first-round picks. Because then, if me and Khan say, well, they'll draft Carnell Tate. Well, I need to get Carnell Tate, and I need to get a defensive player in the first round, too. And right now, the only team I think can do that is the Dallas Cowboys. I think they have two first-round picks.
There are a lot of teams that have multiple first-round
picks in this year's draft.
Yeah.
Okay, so there are teams that can do it. Unless you're doing that for me where I can get two guys in the first round, i.e. the Houston Texans a few years ago, then I'm not moving. Because I'm not moving one spot down just to get some future picks, just to draft Carnell Tate. No, I gotta get more than that in the first round. And Carnell Tate is a hell of a receiver, but Carnell Tate is not in people's mind a top 10 guy.
I'm trying to think
when you're talking about overall talent.
I believe the Browns have multiple first round picks. Mm-hmm. The Cowboys have multiple first round picks. The Colts have no first round picks because mm-hmm. they traded them all.
Yeah.
The Chiefs have multiple first-round picks.
So if I'm them, the only teams I'm
Dolphins.
Trading. Yeah, I'm only in the Dolphins ain't trading away their picks. They're not doing that. They barely got any. They don't have no money.
The Jets.
So unless you're giving me two of your first-round picks this year, both of them, I mean, we're swapping, but then you give me your extra one, then I'm not moving because I want to be able to get both a guy on offense and a guy on defense if I choose. I'm not going to just move down and get some future picks next year or a second-round pick this year. No. I want two first-rounders to move out of this spot.
So if it was GM Derek Mason and the Kansas City Chiefs called and said, we want to move up to four, you would say, give me 9 and 29.
Give me 9 and 29 to start. 9 and 29, that's the start.
Driving a hard bargain, Derek Mason.
Yeah, because obviously you want to move up. And there's somebody in particular you want that you think will not be there. So if that's the case, let's start negotiating.
615-737-1025. We'll continue this conversation on the other side. I'm wondering, after hearing those clips from Mina Kimes, if we are at all exaggerating Jeremiah Love's potential impact on the Titans. 615-737-1025. I do want to ask Derek Mason about a player Mina Kimes did mention in that clip. We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Let me tell all of you that our off-season coverage here on 102.5 The Game is proudly presented by Tennessee Brew Works, locally brewed, community-driven. Tennessee Brew Works, the official craft beer of the football off-season coverage right here on 102.5 The Game.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.